We have 10 people left on the trail. We have a little bit of news about Expedition Class Steve Curtis. We have another Jesse that won an award. Jesse Terry wins Rookie of the Year. A little bit of a storm brewing. Let's kick it off.
Nobody covers dog sledding like Mushing from First Paw Media. Our team of athletes, volunteers, race organizers, and mushers like Robert and Michelle Forto brings you closer to the sport. If it's happening, we are there. Live from the qualifying races in January and February, the Iditarod in March, and in the summer, Mushing takes you on the road with our team and trail tour. We connect you with a history of the sport, in-depth interviews with the top mushers, and great storytelling and breaking news all year long. Follow on mushing.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert for the World Arch Podcast. I am currently sitting in Pyeongtaek, South Korea. It is Friday afternoon, and I know Michelle is manning the mics at our home studio in Willow. We are doing a little bit of time traveling here, but I think we can figure it out. We're going to talk about Thursday's day on the trail. As we mentioned, 10 people currently in White Mountain. They've been there for a little bit. We have Kevin Hansen, Keaton Lobrick, Jason Mackey, Brenda Mackey, Sydney Bale, Sadie Lindquist, Joseph Sabin, Sam Papperman, Richard Beatty, and Adam Lindermuth. So with all that time, it currently shows that Adam is in the Red Lantern position, but I don't know exactly how they're going to equate the time difference with the storm brewing and everybody holed up there. When I looked at this this morning, Korea time, everybody was there for a storm brewing. So I guess that is a little bit of Iditarod math that they're trying to figure out, but we'll figure that out as we go. But let's jump over and talk about the Rookie of the Year award. We talked about this a couple of days ago with Jesse Terry. He came into Nome in 14th place on March 19th at 3:30 in the morning. And remember that the Rookie of the Year is for the first place finishing rookie. He completed the run in 10 days, 23 hours, and 36 minutes with 12 dogs in harness. So congrats to him. He does get a trophy that is presented to him at the finisher's banquet, as well as $2,000 in cash. And what I find really interesting, Michelle, is every single award was won by somebody named Jesse. What do you think?
That is true. And how ironic. But, you know, I think that Jesse Terry deserves a round of applause. And I am going to jump ahead just a little bit and let everybody know that there is a third Jesse that we're going to be discussing later on this evening.
We spent a lot of time talking about the Expedition Class during this year's coverage, in particular with Shell and Thomas Werner. But there has been a report over on Iditarod.com that says, of course, we know the Expedition dynamics have unfolded quite differently with the other team. Curtis and his team made the deliberate choice to stay behind the racers and avoid interfering with the competitive field. That approach, of course, came with consequences. The team encountered rougher trails and definitely more deteriorated trail conditions after the main race crew passed by, which slowed the progress considerably, ultimately contributing to missing the weather window needed to safely enter one of the most isolated sections of the trail and some of the coldest interior temperatures in decades. This is talking about from McGrath to about Ruby. It has been pretty brutal there. So based on our team's dog first judgment, veterinary guidance, and operational realities in front of us, we made the decision to end the mission, Curtis said. That is never easy, but leadership is not about pressing forward. It is about knowing when protecting dogs and people matter more than pride. That's a heck of a leadership lesson there. I think a lot of folks that spend time in the outdoors, whether it's in dog mushing or backpacking or kayaking or whatever, can heed to that information for sure. So that is the scoop on Steve Curtis. It will be interesting to see how the rest of the teams come in. Everybody else fluttered into Nome on schedule. So very quickly, we're going to run through those. Of course, Jesse Holmes in first, Travis Beals, Jeff Dieter, Paige Drobny, Wade Mars, Matt Hall, Riley Dyke, Laurel Eklund, Pete Kaiser, Michelle Phillips, Hannah Lyrick, Jesse Royer, Ryan Reddington, Jesse Terry, Josie Tier, Shelley, Sam Martin, Bailey Vitello, Gabe Dunham, Roan Booser, and Chad Stoddard have all made it into Roan, into Nome. Any other information that you want to share about the day on the trail, Michelle?
Not as far as the current finishers. I do think that we've got some discussions that I want to bring up in just a moment. But let's go back to Curtis for just a second. I really appreciated his stance and positioning there for wanting to stay at the back of the pack. I think that it's unfortunate that the alongside, if you will, Iditarod and the infrastructure that it offers kind of fell apart. I think that that needs to have some clarification if they are going to continue the expedition class. I understand quite honestly the reasoning for Werner and Roki to want to be out in front and away from the competing mushers as well. Their idea of, hey, we have the opportunity to get out in front of these guys, let's do that, meant that they had the wherewithal to stay within that infrastructure that was offered to them as they headed down the trail. I know that other participants that have done expedition style journeys alongside Iditarod without this expedition class, without the infrastructure of Iditarod, usually do it within a week of Iditarod starting so that they are well out in front of the competitive mushers. Is that right, Robert?
Yeah, and just taking the Serum Run expedition as a model with that, they would typically start towards the end of February. And they would go right about the time that the Iron Dog Sled Dog race would take off. And that usually happens around President's Day, if you're thinking about the calendar. And then the Iditarod will start on the first Saturday in March. So a couple of weeks there in between those two events. So they would take off as the Iron Doggers went through and all the trail was marked and all of that. And then, of course, the Iditarod would follow in succession. Now, remember that almost all of the Serum Run expeditions were taking part from Nenana to Nome, not necessarily from Anchorage and, of course, Willow and then on up. So they would meet up there at the Yukon River at about the Ruby checkpoint. So well into either the race or the expedition. And it's interesting that Steve Curtis does say the trail conditions of being at the back of the pack. I can attest that 100%. I have been in that position so many times where the trail is just trashed by the time I get there, especially going through the more technical sections of the trail. For example, if you're going up and down hilly terrain, the dog teams will figure out sort of a gully in the middle of the trail, using your drag and your brake will kind of dig you in, if you will, and it makes driving a dog team much more interesting than if you have a smooth shot down the trail like a first through team does. So I think that's a contributing factor. And of course, weather is a big one here, as we talked about with that section of trail where they figured out, you know what, this is time to call it. So
right,
Right. Good to hear that the information there. Michelle, what else do you have?
Well, and you know, I look forward to seeing the expedition class continue and learn from some of these strategic situations that happened out there. And how can you give it some media and some limelight by, you know, participating in the ceremonial start and, you know, by participating in the Willow restart, because that's part of the fanfare of it, right? And if the whole idea and premise behind doing this class was to provide additional fanfare so that we could generate some better eyes and sponsorships opportunities onto the Iditarod, then I understand why they did it this way this year. But it'll be interesting to see how they, how or if they do move forward with it. Robert, I did want to bring up something that I did find very interesting in researching for tonight's show. I find it interesting that there are, like you said, there's just 10 mushers left on the trail, and it's Thursday night. And of those 10 mushers that are left out on the trail on a Thursday night, 8 of them are rookies. And one could even argue that the only veteran besides, you know, Keaton Lovrick is a veteran, but he's just got the one Iditarod under his belt. This will be his second go at it, if I'm not mistaken. But Jason Mackey's out there.
Yeah, I remember during the COVID year in 2020, they had what they called the Elam 11, and they were all holed up there in Elam, which is a notorious section for bad weather. And at the time, Martin Bucer was in the Jason Mackey role there. And they, of course, persevered after the storm and then made it in. But it was sort of the talk of the race that time, that old grandpa veteran Martin was going to lead these kids through. And, of course, it looks like Jason is that quote-unquote grandpa in this role. Now, of course, there's a lot of experience there at White Mountain. You know, we talk about Brenda Mackey, who has been racing her entire life. And of course, Keaton with his second Iditarod now, and
right,
a lot of experience with the rookies as well.
Right. And even Sydney Bale is a return, because she, you know, ran last year, and I think a couple of the others did as well. But I think that it's going to make for a fine finish, because I don't know, maybe some of our listeners can definitely check on my information here, but I think this might be the most rookies coming in all at the same-ish time in Iditarod history, as well as the fact that I think this might be the fastest finishing race for any Iditarod with that many rookies left out on the trail. It really looks like everybody's going to be in possibly by tomorrow night.
It'll be interesting to see, and what I said at the top of the show, how they're going to do the time differential. I'm sure that they have a formula for that, but I just don't know what that is, considering the and Adam Lindermuth coming in as the current Red Lantern holder. So if they've been there for several hours and they're all well past the 8-hour mark, I don't know necessarily if time stops at that point where they say, okay, you know, this crew got here at 8 p.m. just for sake of argument. And then this crew got here at 8:05. And then Adam Lindermuth got here at 8:30. You guys can go on X time. You guys can go on Y time. And then you can go on Z time. And then you finally figure it out. But what's interesting here, since everybody is sort of there together, there will sort of be a run for the finish. There isn't people kind of spread out amongst the trail. Everybody will sort of start off, I guess, as a group.
Hey,
and then make their way.
I'm all for a mass start out of White Mountain. That would be fun.
That would be fun. Okay, Michelle, before we go into our musher profile of the evening, any other news?
No, I just found that this little thing that's going on tonight, it just seems really interesting to me.
So tonight we are talking about Jessie Royer, big time fan favorite of Iditarod. She has been doing this for a very long time. She's always a very capable competitor. Michelle, what do you know about Jessie?
Well, besides the fact that Jessie is the third Jessie that we will be discussing this evening, I know that Jesse is, like Robert just said, a longtime competitor whose career reflects grit, consistency, and a lifelong connection to animals and the outdoors. Royer was born in Idaho and raised on a cattle ranch in Montana, where hard work and animal care were part of her daily life. Horses were central to her upbringing, but even as a kid, Jessie showed an instinct for working animals in creative ways. By the age of 10, she had trained her border collie, Bear, to help haul firewood and supplies around the ranch. Her first team included a billy goat and an early glimpse into the resourcefulness and determination that would define her career. Her introduction to sled dog racing came at 15 when she attended her first race. That moment changed everything. Within weeks, she had her first sled dog, and by 16, she was racing her own team. Just a year later, she made history by becoming the youngest person and the first woman to win Montana's Race to the Sky, setting the stage for a career that would stretch across decades. By 1998, Royer made the move to Alaska, where she quickly established herself in the world of long-distance mushing. She entered the Iditarod Trail sled dog race for the first time in 2001, finishing an impressive 14th and earning Rookie of the Year honors. From there, she became one of the most consistent mushers on the circuit. Over the years, Royer has completed more than 20 Iditarods with 9 top 10 finishes to her name. During a strong run from 2008 through 2011, she was the highest placing female musher in the race, solidifying her reputation as a steady and competitive presence on the trail. A big part of her success has always been her dogs, including her legendary lead dog, Culling, who earned the Golden Harness Award in 2009. Culling went on to complete 9 Iditarods and retired after helping lead a top 10 team at the age of 12. A testament to both the dog's durability and Royer's commitment to exceptional dog care. Today, Royer is based back in Montana, where she continues to live a life centered around animals and the outdoors. She runs dog sled tours, trains teams, and stays active with horses, hunting, and mounted shooting. Whether she is behind a dog team or in the saddle, her lifestyle remains rooted in the same principles she learned growing up on the ranch: hard work, resilience, and respect for the animals that make it all possible. For Jessie Royer, mushing has never been just about racing. It's about partnership, perseverance, and a life lived close to the land. And after decades on the trail, she remains one of the sport's most respected and enduring competitors.
It is interesting, Michelle, that we're talking about 3 Jessies here in the race, with Jesse Holmes, Jesse Terry, and Jesse Royer. Interestingly enough, they're all in their 40s, with Jesse Terry being the youngest at 42, Jesse Holmes being 43, and Jesse Royer being 48 years old. I guess it's sort of like other names in the past, where in the early 70s, Robert was a very popular name, where I got mine. And of course, back in the day, you had names like Margaret and Rupert and Stanley and all of those. I guess they're in that decade, in the late 70s, I guess that would be early 80s, Jesse was a very popular name for both males and females, right, Michelle?
It seems to be that situation.
All right, let's jump over into our moment in mushing history. We're talking about another woman musher, Susan Butcher. We've talked about her a few times during this year's Iditarod. What do you know?
I know that Susan Butcher made a lot of headlines in the 80s. So let's go back in time. Tonight's show is all about time travel, isn't it, Robert? Maybe that's what we should title it. But we're going to go back to 1987. Susan Butcher retains title and breaks Iditarod Trail record. From the KNOM Radio Report, Dateline, March 18th, copyright KNOM, 1987. Susan Butcher, defending Iditarod champion, blasted down the trail and into the record books this morning all by herself for the final 77 miles, shattering the record which she herself set last year. A runner broken, Butcher ran alongside the sled as her team trotted under the Fox Olson Trail Monument in the brilliant cold sunshine after 11 days, 2 hours, 5 minutes, and 13 seconds. She was all smiles, and the crowd of 1,000 Mushing fans, including the entire student body of Nome Elementary School, cheered enthusiastically. The finish came in brilliant sunshine, a wind-snapping Front Street flags to full furl with a temperature just above zero. As Butcher cuddled with her snoozing two lead dogs, Granite and Maddie, at the finish line, she told KNOM and dozens of other reporters that Swenson wasn't running his own race. He was playing games with me the entire race. I think he was really trying to mess me up and get me nervous and hope I'd make a mistake. The old Susan Butcher maybe would have fallen for that, but I've gotten enough confidence in my team and my ability that that kind of pressure doesn't really bother me too much anymore. Her dogs looked great. They just gained in power the farther along we went, Butcher said. The race shaped up the way I expected. I always knew it would come down to me and Rick at the end. I never doubted his ability to win the race because if I had, he'd have won it. Swenson was only 20 minutes back out at White Mountain, but Butcher maintained the spread overnight. Swenson finished second in the second fastest Iditarod Trail time in history shortly after 3 p.m. for a total 11 days, 6 hours, 25 minutes, and 43 seconds. Robert, I have always enjoyed reading Susan Butcher's commentary. Man, was she just one tough cookie and not afraid or unapologetic about it.
Yeah, she was known for that for sure. And there was a true battle between her and Rick Swenson for a long time. It's interesting to see how it was a record back then in the late 80s at 11 days and 6 hours, where we've shaved off 2 full days of that time this year. And if you remember, the oldest musher to win the race, Mitch Seavey, did it in the fastest at a race of over 8 days, but he also did the Fairbanks start as well. And of course, we learn a little bit more about Granite and Maddie. Those are her two big time lead dogs. Granite was sort of the Togo or Balto of the crew. Everybody knows those two dogs' names. They know much about sled dog history for sure. So, Michelle, as I mentioned, I am here in South Korea, and tomorrow when I'm on the podcast, it will be Saturday. You're going to be doing our Friday night show from our home studio. We are going to be talking about the Widow's Lamp and the Red Lantern, as you mentioned. If all goes well, everybody will be back into Nome and finished before the finisher's banquet on Sunday night. Finish this up, Michelle.
Well, as I am predicting, I am definitely predicting, storm or not, that we have all finishers in to Nome by our coverage tomorrow night. And I still have a vote out there, if Nordman or Erbach are listening, for a mass start out of White Mountain due to the circumstances. I think that would make it hella fun. But I'm just wondering, Robert, if we do have everyone in come Friday night, what the heck are we going to talk about on Saturday?
We're definitely going to talk about the banquet and the goings on of Nome. That's definitely on the list. Talk a little bit about a couple of other stories that we have, including other races that are still going to be happening after the Iditarod, including the Kobuk 440, the Nome Council 200, the Open North American is going on as we speak up in Fairbanks, so that is a sprint race. But otherwise, we have a little bit left for the mushing season to go on, and what we're going to talk about on the rest of our coverage, including our finishing series with Rod Perry. That's that is one that you're definitely going to want to listen to as well. Michelle, it's always a pleasure. I'm glad we're figuring this out. I know the audio is not perfect, but I think people will understand. We do apologize for not having an audio file.
But wait, Robert, I actually do have an audio file tonight, so we can take this as a little bit of a bonus for our listeners since it's coming at the end. This is a song that I would be listening to out there on the trail. It's If You Only Knew by Shinedown. And since Robert sent me a text at 3 a.m., this is the song that immediately popped in my head. It's 4:03 and I can't sleep. Without you next to me, I toss and turn like the sea. If I drown tonight, bring me back to life. Breathe your breath in me. The only thing that I still believe in is you. If you only knew.
Well, this is a mushing podcast, and that's a pretty, quote, mushy love song for sure.
it's appropriate.
It is appropriate. And if a lot of you guys have done a lot of traveling, you know that it takes a day or two to get yourself adjusted to time zones. I'm sitting here with my daughter, Nicole, who's traveling the first time with me internationally. And we were talking this morning why we both woke up at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. And I told her, this is our normal time to be waking up in terms of the clock difference on Alaska time. And it happens every single time. So I guess, yeah, it's appropriate. Michelle, I look forward to being back on tomorrow and trying to figure out what is left for this race. We'll talk again soon, okay?
Absolutely. You guys go enjoy your lunch. I'm going to go enjoy my dinner.
All right, guys, we'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.
Are you a fan of the great outdoors? Do you enjoy the thrill of speed and adventure? Then listen up. Introducing Mushing, your ultimate guide to the exciting world of dog-powered sports and mushing. Whether you're a seasoned musher or just starting out, Mushing has got you covered. Get ready to immerse yourself in captivating stories of incredible sled dog races, expert training tips from seasoned professionals, and gear reviews to help you make the right choices for your team. From the breathtaking landscapes of Alaska to the snowy trails of Scandinavia, Mushing takes you on a thrilling journey through the world of dog-powered sports. Don't miss out on the latest issue, packed with exclusive interviews with top mushers, in-depth articles on sled dog nutrition, and stunning photography that will transport you to the heart of the action. So whether you're dreaming of competing in the Iditarod or simply want to learn more about this incredible sport, Mushing is your go-to resource. Subscribe now and get ready to unleash your passion for mushing. Visit our website at mushing.com or find us on your favorite podcast platform. Mushing, where the spirit of adventure meets the power of the pack.